Hello, my name is Brian McKenna. I'm one of the editors at Computer Weekly, and I'm here bidding you a very warm welcome to the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload Podcast.
Those two other voices were...
I'm Claire McDonald, I'm the business editor at Computer Weekly.
I'm Angelica Mighty, acting management editor.
Angelica, this is your first time on the podcast.
Yes,
welcome.
Indeed. Thank you for having me.
But you're no stranger to broadcast.
Yeah.
You're on BBC recently.
Yes, I was. Just commenting on the Brazilian president's social media strategy, yes. Bolsonaro.
A really good strategy, is it?
Can it be called a strategy?
It is orchestrated by his son. And he's still on campaign mode, as it seems. And just using it to create all sorts of... situations within his base of supporters and other politicians, which is which reminds you of someone else.
Yeah.
So his supporters could be said to be analogous to the Trump base.
Yes.
Except more so.
Yes, there are some similarities, but I just think he's really clumsy when it comes to social media, to because he engages his current base but excludes everyone else.
Mm.
Do you think it's very much a case of he doesn't care what's said as long as it's about him?
Yeah, to an extent, yes. And also he's not using it very well to sort of bring people along, if that makes sense. So just a very very much a case of excluding people and just antagonizing the opposition. So yeah, he's learning. His son seems to have been advised by Steve Bannon, who was one of Trump's campaign strategists.
Oh, right, the alt-right guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think we need to return to this at some point. In some depth and properly. Today, you're going to be talking us through some government stuff, because you're covering the government beat while Liz is away.
Yes, and on a little working holiday. Hello, Liz, if you're listening to this. I'm covering government and management topics for Computer Weekly this spring. So the big topic this week has been the introduction of the world's first online safety regulations.
And you're going to tell us about that in a bit. Claire, you're going to tell us what happened in Vegas last week.
Yeah, traditionally what happens in Vegas is meant to stay in Vegas, but not...
For the purpose of the tape.
Yeah. Not this time. I'm going to tell you about my attendance at Sweet World 2019.
And I'm going to talk about data yet again, as Mr. Data. I'm going to talk about turning some companies, some Silicon Valley companies that are trying to help turn raw data into business insight at the end of the day. But we are going to start with Claire.
Mm-hmm.
You were at Sweet World and... attended a very interesting session about...
It was about women in business. So Sweet World is the annual conference of NetSuite, recently acquired by Oracle, but we've been assured that very much will stay as is and continue with some of the projects that it's already on.
Seems to be
a big... They definitely want to solidify that as an opinion. But yeah, so this year they had a women in business track. As far as I'm aware, it's one of their first attempts at having a dedicated track to women in business, whereas before it might have been, you know, like a breakfast or a session.
Because Salesforce do this, Dreamforce, they...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Splunk at their .conf, they do a diversity track, so that can be anything from women in tech to LGBT to BAME to ableness.
And the session at Sweet World, just to talk us through some of the things that were said understand, Nikki Tozer, who's NetSuite's EMEA Vice President. She was.
She introduced the session. She had a chat about her career. And it was very interesting. She seemed to be of the... You get women who are in the camp of, oh, I don't feel like being a woman in tech is a disadvantage. And then you get women of the, all the women have to help the women camp. And she seemed a little bit like a convert. She seemed like she started off as someone who was a woman in a male-dominated environment, felt like she could make it on her own, didn't see the need for networks and stuff. And then in this session said, actually, I don't want to put a dampener on the women in tech movement because it is important to chat to each other and it is important to feel welcome and we should be doing what we can to advance the conversation and increase the amount of diversity in tech as well. So it was cool. She struck me as someone who was very, you know, like down to earth and had maybe switched her thought process up a bit.
That is very interesting. I read your piece a couple of times, Claire. And one of the things that jumped out at me was you said a common theme was the power that the women in tech organisations, mainly, I guess, have when they band together. So a kind of collectivist ethic.
Yeah, I think it's... you can see this in lots of pockets of society, and it's something that's especially come along with the age of the internet, is that people are suddenly realising that they're not alone in situations. And I don't think that it can be underestimated the amount of courage and power that can give you just knowing that you're not the only one and that there'll be someone there to back you up if you have a point or if you feel like you can't speak up but know that someone else has. You kind of get that bravery off of them.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, that's definitely something that can be of benefit from women in tech networks, or just knowing that there are other people out there who found it hard too.
Yeah. And I like the story about Deborah Perry from CEO of Alley to the Valley. She was talking about being in a Starbucks lineup, I guess, as the Americans would say, and
as the British would say, a queue. Yeah, so she worked for government in Washington. And then because of her husband's career change, she ended up moving to Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Didn't have a job when she arrived there.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, just ended up in a bit of a chat with a woman in a queue when she was waiting for her coffee in Starbucks. And suddenly ended up on this sort of tractor entrepreneurship, basically. Just a little chat, and then suddenly like, oh, I can introduce it to this person who can introduce it to that person, and then...
That's amazing.
Bam!
Claire, one thing that stood out from your early comments, do you find that there are more converts, as it were, coming up in large tech organisations? Women that previously didn't think that communities and engagement with other women was and support was necessary, and now are changing their, talk about it.
Yeah, I have seen that quite a lot, especially women who are in higher up positions. I think that you get to a point where you suddenly end up looking at the path behind you and realising that times are different now. Women are starting to break into the sector and there's an actual business need for it as well. And they're thinking, well, I managed to get here and it was difficult, and therefore I would like to help others to get here and make it less difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there is a lot more of that going on, I think.
Do you think there are any differences in relation to, say, American culture vis-a-vis the UK and Europe? I mean, it always strikes me that quite a lot of this discourse is about getting women onto boards, which is a great thing.
Mm.
But it's also a very American, hyper-ambitious type of thing. I mean, most human beings will never see a board of any kind. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. So I was at an event earlier this week. hosted by AHP and in collaboration with the Fawcett Society.
Mm.
And I haven't transcribed it yet or listened back, so forgive me if I'm wrong. But one of the MPs that was in attendance said that when it comes to higher up positions in STEM roles, the UK is ahead of Europe, but in terms of lower down position in STEM roles, the UK is behind Europe when it comes to women.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that, as you say, the US is a little bit further ahead in that because of they seem to be a lot more people in the US seem to be brought up to be a lot more competitive and a lot more cutthroat.
Mm.
And I think that it's more important to them to reach a higher up position.
Mm.
So I have met a lot more women in higher up positions in US companies than in UK companies, but that just might be what I've been exposed to.
But do you think that's going to change given the requirement to have women in boards in the UK?
Yeah, I hope so. It won't be as quick as we need it to be, mm-hmm. but there definitely is a lot of push to change it.
And it seems like a mentorship was quite a big theme in the
Mentors was a big part of the conversation. And there was also a chat about the kinds of mentors that you should have.
Okay.
So it shouldn't just be people who look like you was one of the themes of the week. You can pick someone who looks like you and then get an opinion that's very much like your own, or you can pick people from different backgrounds and different perspectives.
Right.
Might make you think about something that you haven't thought of.
Yeah, help you to reframe and so on.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting indeed. Yeah, that competitiveness in US society, I just wonder if we're maybe a bit less like that.
I think it depends.
Mm. What about, because you have, Angelica, you have obviously experience, different experience in terms of Latin America, but also Italy as well?
Yes.
Is there a strong kind of women in diversity in tech trend in Brazil or elsewhere that you've seen?
We see a lot of the same problems that we see here in Europe and the US, but that is compounded by the fact that Brazil is an extremely sexist culture. Mm. So the prevalence of the macho stereotype as the reference for success is very strong in the tech sector especially. But what I've been hearing is that the startup culture is starting to change that. There's a lot of success stories female tech entrepreneurs who are sort of changing that.
Right, that's interesting. Mindset. Right, right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
But that macho behaviour isn't helpful for the men either. No. Especially when you think of, you know, like the biggest killer of men in their 30s, is it? Or in their teens to 30s is suicide.
Yeah,
if you've
exactly.
got like this macho-ness, they can't talk about what's wrong. And mm-hmm. that's a very like high stress situation to put yourself in.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a sort of expectation on men to provide leadership and to know all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, we're just human beings, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
And have to be more open to admitting that we don't know everything, we don't know the answers, and that's particularly true in higher leadership roles, I would think.
Yeah.
Do you think that a lot of mentorship goes on? Or do you think that they just try not to ask questions and
I think there's a lot of embarrassment about what's appropriate to ask, for a start. I think, again, that is a lot more common in the startup community, where people are just forced to talk to each other. Otherwise, they just stay in a bubble and they eventually fail.
Yeah.
So that's filtering into the more like established corporate culture, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And just a kind of nerdy sports observation, because this was a theme in your piece, Claire, about kind of men being kind of made competitive through sports, basically. Yeah. But I'm just thinking about like American football, yeah. These colossal guys dressed basically in armour.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK and Europe, the leading sport, I guess, is what the Americans would call soccer.
Yeah, football.
You know, you've got these little fellas being really nimble and...
Yeah.
It's a different culture.
Yeah, and that feeds into the whole competitiveness in the US versus in other nations, right? Mm. Because in the US as well, for quite a lot of the majorly followed sports, there aren't women's teams. They don't do women's baseball, for example.
Yeah.
They do softball up until a point.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there are any women's American football teams. Are there?
I'm not aware of any.
Or basketball teams, maybe basketball.
Well, the fact that you don't know about says quite something.
It does, absolutely.
Well, in Brazil, that's particularly the case.
Yeah.
The football country.
You have the best footballers on the planet, by and large.
I might add, we have the best female football team in the world. Mm. And our striker, Marta, is better than Neymar
in terms of goal ratio.
Goals, yeah.
See?
Mm. A little bit of trivia for you.
And in the UK, you've got women's rugby.
Women's rugby, women's football teams are also higher and higher profile.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from trying to make the technology world better, I suppose, for more diverse populations, women and others who are kind of excluded by some of the norms in our society, to making the internet as a whole a bit safer all round. Angelica, is this set of online safety regulations coming from the UK government?
That's right. Announced on Monday, it's what they're calling the world's first framework designed to make the internet a safer place. So holding companies accountable for the impact of their products and services online, and also be responsible for tackling the potential harm to users. So companies of any size, including social media, websites and forums. So that includes all sorts of potential harms, from terrorism and cyberbullying to child sexual exploitation to behaviours that might not be illegal per se, but are still highly damaging.
Mm, interesting. I mean, this government is doing the odd good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a start.
While Brexit rages around our heads.
You might argue that's a bit of a distraction as well.
You could say that. And the European Union, the European Commission has also been publishing guidelines, hasn't it, this week for artificial intelligence.
Yes, so it's all along those lines of regulating the internet, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So they published a set of principles around ethical application of AI, and they're going to be piloting some projects where they're going to apply those guidelines. So it's 7 principles.
Okay.
They've listed, including human agency, privacy, governance, transparency, and so on.
Can you explain human agency to me?
Well, it involves fundamental rights, rather than AI shouldn't be decreasing or limiting your autonomy.
Oh, okay. It's like Asimov's rules, right?
Yes, there was something around, there was something from a think tank a couple of weeks ago around the need to regulate police algorithms.
Yeah, because they can be so, so biased.
Yes.
You can end up
arresting someone based on
socioeconomic background or ethnicity or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So who watches The Watchmen?
It's when things are regulated in hindsight, it always terrifies me. It's been let loose for so long, and they just run away with themselves, and then everyone sits around going like, oh yeah, that's bad, isn't it? Maybe we should
regulate that.
Yeah, should we do something about this?
Exactly. We had an event, a Computer Weekly event, a couple of days ago, and that was talking about ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was making the point that we will constantly be playing catch up.
Yeah.
So what happens then if you won't have an option to opt out of things?
Yeah, because you're already in.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you go and buy insurance, you're either forced to put some device in your car to monitor your driving patterns all the time or tell the insurance a bunch of things.
Mm.
Or if you refuse to do so, you're going to pay
a premium,
10 times as much. So how do you handle that?
That was the 500 club?
Yeah, CW 500.
Oh, okay. How was that?
Yeah, it was great. We had the room packed of people.
Who were the speakers?
There were three speakers. There was someone from DEFRA. There was someone from an advisor to News UK.
And there was the head of the... forgive me if I'm not going to get this right. It was the head of the Center for Data Ethics.
Yeah, that was it.
That was the guy.
And as well, that was a balanced, well, semi-balanced panel, two women and a man.
Exactly.
Cool. That's how we do it at Computer Weekly.
Yeah. It sounds like an interesting session. That will be written up.
Yes.
By you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm working on the videos at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Center for Data Ethics was set up to actually help companies handle the complexity around what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah.
It's because it's complicated. In many cases, ethics is down to personal opinion, right? Like morals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone has a different opinion on whether something's okay or not.
Yeah.
You know, like I might be okay with having a black box in my car. Because I figure, like, I drive all right anyway. Not true. But no, someone else might see it as an affront to their privacy. Because it would pick up, you know, like, say you were having an affair and it knew where you were going and at what time.
Yeah, you know? Ethics is a minefield,
isn't
it?
It's difficult.
Or if you're parking on pavements, Claire.
If you're parking and then thinking it's okay because I know what time the ticket inspector comes around.
and CIOs have to start taking responsibility for the ethics of their systems, the systems that they're introducing or maintaining.
Yeah.
So another thing to add to the CIO's already complicated job.
Well, you're a super experienced interviewer of CIOs, aren't you? Many of the profiles of CIOs in Computer Weekly have been written by your good self.
Mm-hmm. And there seems to be increasingly a frequent concern.
It's a big topic.
Is it something that, in your experience, they're really well equipped to deal with, or is it just yet another thing to add to the to-do list for them?
It's just another thing, isn't it? I think as their time is sort of freed up with the automation of a lot of functions in IT, they expected to use that time they freed up to focus on other things like that. So it never ends.
It's always said, isn't it? It frees up more time to be more strategic, but then, you know, how do you do that?
Well, you have to get trained and get informed and talk to people. I guess it makes them have to justify their job.
I do sometimes wonder, and it's the same with, you know, like a diversity and inclusion advisors, you know, like ethics advisors. Where do they learn these things? What is their background in? Psychology?
I think that Centre for Data Ethics, I think it's also innovations on the end of the title. Not that matters for the purpose of our discussion at all, although it probably matters to them. people get very precious about what their precise Institute's title is, I think they were drawing on people who we could call ethicists.
Ethicists.
Yeah, maybe like, I don't know, theologians or lawyers or
well, a lot of people. These disciplines are being brought into IT now, yes? So sociologists,
philosophers,
anthropologists,
yeah.
And psychologists and
robot psychologists.
So that's where
they, robot therapists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where they learn about ethics.
Yeah.
There's a Brazilian bank, online bank, that is hiring a lot of anthropologists to predict not only customer behaviors, so it can the offering can evolve accordingly, but also to predict the kinds of roles they're going to have to recruit into the IT organization.
Okay.
Do they predict the behavior of the robots based on the machine learning of the behavior of the customer?
Yes. That entire algorithm is covered.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But the EU, just coming back to the European Commission slightly, they have been very cutting edge when it comes to regulation of the Wild West of the internet. And, but they're not the creators of it. So as we know from previous podcasts, I was in Silicon Valley recently on a tour. I just thought I'd flag a feature that I published this week about how CIOs, because I tend to write, when I do these write-ups, I write it from the perspective of saying to CIOs, here's some of the new things that are developing in the Valley. And it's always a little bit haphazard, but nevertheless, it's quite an interesting concept of taking raw data, supposedly the new oil, and then refining that so that it yields business value in the forms of business insight and so on. And it's a non-trivial thing to get from raw data to that in the end. There was a couple of companies that we saw on the tour who sort of addressed that whole question of getting what you could call the data value chain of getting from raw to insight. And one of them is called Fivetran. It's just a play on words. The Fortran programming language, they called themselves Fivetran. And then they went looking for a business problem. So it wasn't anything to do with
that's not how you're going to do it. You're going to find a problem and then solve it. You're not going to just be like, do you know what? We're going to find a problem.
It's the Valley, man. You know, there's lots of venture capital money sloshing around. It has to go somewhere. And these guys look to have a decent kind of shot at it, because their basic idea is to get the kind of the raw data from data sources into data warehouses more quickly. Without going through a kind of older paradigm of what's called ETL technology, extract, transform, and load. And their CEO said to me he just found it baffling that it took so long to get data from data sources into data warehouses. So that's the bet, that kind of data pipeline bet, is the bet that their technology, they say, can help to solve. And cloud computing is the context, because you now have the rise of cloud data warehouses like Snowflake. You know, and older technology might be Teradata, although they're modernizing as well. But getting that into those kind of cloud-based data warehouses is something that their technology is said to do. They're also the company that had the 12 office dogs.
The doggies.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about doggies, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Because when you were talking about your trip to Silicon Valley, you spoke quite a lot about doggies. So I thought that I would round up, let you talk about the doggies, and then talk about my doggy experience in Sweet World.
Yeah, cool.
They had a little pen. It was the best 2 minutes of my life. But you get to go and sit in with the doggies, and they give you toys, and they play. Aww. And then one of them seemed to be really friendly, and he was coming up, and he was sniffing me. And then I realised it was because I'd spilt some guacamole on my knee, and he could smell it, and he was trying to eat it.
So you didn't bring him up? You didn't smuggle him home?
Couldn't smuggle a popple.
Yeah. And, I mean, did you find them quite de-stressing? Because I suppose that's the idea. Conferences are quite stressful environments.
Yeah.
You know, especially for IT people.
Yeah, it was. You just forget about everything. They don't care what's happening around them. They just care that they've got someone to play with.
Mm.
Exactly. Oh. Particularly stressful for UK reporters coming all the way to the Valley.
Yeah, that's true. It's a long way. In fact, our Caroline Donnelly, as we speak, is flying back from San Fran.
She is.
She's due to land soon, but she will still be on a plane at time of recording.
Indeed, and she's at Google Next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At which this company I was talking about, Fivetran, they were promoting, quite understandably, this partnership they've got with Google, which they were announcing at Google Next.
Yeah, the cloud.
Google Next this week. But anyway, I talk in the feature, which is on the website, about these Silicon Valley startups and how not just Fivetran, but there are some others, five altogether in that piece, basically address different aspects of this fundamental problem for organisations of how to kind of refine your data
and really
turn it into the new oil.
Mm. On that point of not knowing what to do to refine the oil, I was reading an article on the annual edition of Wired with predictions for 2019.
Yeah.
And there was a piece by Mike Lynch, the infamous Mike Lynch, saying that we might be hitting a phase of disenchantment with AI and analytics in general.
Yeah.
Because all these companies, they haven't been addressing problems. They've just been presenting offerings that had AI and analytics just because it's interesting to venture capitalists.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that there might be the case that people will start like sort of becoming more realistic about technology?
I in terms of kind of data analytics and AI, which is the kind of thing that I cover, I do keep coming back to that question with both suppliers and with users, because companies, CIOs and their bosses have invested so much in trying to kind of do something with big data and get some value out of it. And they've spent a lot of time ingesting big data and building data lakes and spending money on expensive data scientists as well to try and get the value out of the data. And I do ask again and again, isn't there going to be a bit of a backlash from not CIOs, but CEOs? I mean, I've given you all this money. Where's my value? And I think that, you know, the sort of companies that I was talking about there from Silicon Valley, but could come from other places too, who are trying to address all the kind of... Because it is non-trivial to get this big data that's not in neat relational databases, that's coming from sensors, that's coming from social media, etc., all that kind of genuinely messy data, to try and get value out of that is a non-trivial thing.
Mm.
I think it's a very open question as to whether there is going to be success there. We shall see. Also published recently quite a big feature on precisely this topic about how BI and analytics kind of squares up to big data, which is also available on the website, listeners, to go and have a detailed read of. I think it is quite an open question, though. I'd be sceptical, and if I were a CEO who'd been spending an awful lot of money on this stuff in the last 10 years, I would be asking the question, where is my gold?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is it? But you know, clearly there are companies who are getting value. I know, Claire, you wrote about Sainsbury's and their data team working with, I think, Alteryx was the technology involved there.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give everybody more of an idea in the company about, you know, how applications and data can be used so that they can be a bit more mindful of it, not necessarily just in the tech teams.
Cool. I think that's about all we've got time for this week.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Angelica, you're going to be visiting Bath very soon.
Yes.
Have to catch a train.
Yeah.
So thank you very much to Angelica, to Claire. Thank you for listening. We'll be on holiday next week.
Mm-hmm.
It's Good Friday. It's Easter. I think we're all looking forward to an Easter holiday.
Yeah, very much so.
I know the UK's MPs are.
Do they get time off?
Well, they have now been given leave to leave Westminster and go back to their families and constituencies and so on. But yeah, Easter Hall's coming.
Yeah, Easter eggs, rebirth.
Indeed. And for us lapsed Catholics, perhaps a visit to the one and only Mass that we'll go to in the course of the year.
What about Christmas?
Midnight Mass. Yeah, that one as well. See. So two Masses. Another thing. It's like Monty Python, isn't it? Cool. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.